Well, here he is, Mr. RoboCop himself. He is the star, one of the stars of the number one movie in America right now, Star Trek
Into the Darkness.
Here he is, Mr. Peter Weller, PhD. Mr. Weller, are you there?
Yes, I am. Bradford is what I want to know.
Oh, you're breaking up. We couldn't hear you. What'd you say? Uh-oh. We have a bad connection here, Mr. Weller.
Can you hear me?
Now we can hear you. There we go.
All right. So you said I'd buy that for a dollar. What would you buy for a dollar?
You know, that was my question
that
to
is
you,
a good
actually.
Question. Yeah, yeah.
That was one of my questions I had written down. I have like three real questions written down. One was, what would Peter Weller buy for a dollar?
I don't know. The 99-cent store, you know, I'd buy a, you know, a squeaky toy for my 20-month-old kid. That's what I'd buy.
I'd probably buy a Blu-ray DVD of RoboCop 3.
Mm-hmm.
You could probably get that.
Well, you know, I'm not in that, so you can go ahead and buy that for a dollar.
Exactly.
That's why it's 99 cents.
How come you weren't in that movie? It killed me that, like, you know, you have a franchise. The franchise star is in the first and second. You make a ton of money. They should be building that movie around you and your schedule.
Well, you know, I was done with it by two. You know, number one was so brilliant. Number two was good, but I was cooked with it, man. I went off to do David Cronenberg's Naked Lunch. I really wanted to do Naked Lunch, and so that was the next thing on the agenda, you know. But, you know, I was happy to do RoboCop. It's a brilliant movie. I was happy to leave it. I was done with it.
Yeah. What is it? Is it Paul Verhoeven? Verhoeven? How do you pronounce that last name?
Verhoeven.
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 Yeah.
How's that Verhoeven. Dude? What's that dude like?
He's brilliant. He's brilliant. I've stolen a lot of his ideas. You know, he did Basic Instinct, and he did a lot of great movies before he did RoboCop. He did The Fourth Man. He got Oscar, I think, for Best Foreign Film. And Spetters and Soldier of Orange. He did Black Book a couple of years ago. He's a great director. One of the
Total
best.
Recall? Yeah, he did Total Recall. Too.
Total Recall, man. Total Recall.
Film. Starship
yeah,
Troopers?
Big, Starship Troopers, they're going to remake that now, too.
Yeah, I saw that. You know, I had read something somewhere, some interview he was saying that RoboCop was really about Jesus Christ. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, look, you know, if an American director had done that movie, it would probably not be as powerful a story of resurrection as it is. But the whole idea of resurrection, and now I'm speaking as a PhD candidate, by the way, you know, the resurrection idea, the idea of the notion of resurrection is probably Egyptian, and it's probably been transferred into the Pharisees, you know, the priests that debate Jesus. They believe in resurrection. The Book of Job in the Hebrew Bible, the Tanakh, is about resurrection, you know, a metaphorical resurrection where a guy loses everything and is reborn through faith. So, you know, there's also the Hebraic story of the golem where a village conjures up an entity, a deity, to take care of the ills and woes of its village, and then they can't get rid of it. So there's all sorts of resurrection themes in it. It's not just Jesus. But Paul is the guy that infused it with that because it is a story about resurrection. It is a story about, you know, progress in the name of progress, in the name of big business, in the name of trickle-down city bullshit, you know, politics. They take a guy's life, and he's reborn.
Do you think that resonates more today than it did when the movie was actually made?
I think it does, man. You know, it's the first time this 25th anniversary in this last year I've seen it three times. And I kind of step out of my own criticism, my own work, the old critical mass or the critical theory, and see the movie for what it was. And it's prescient. It's ahead of its time. It's anthropological. You watch it in 200 years and wonder what the 20th century age of information, you know, had done to the soul of the individual. And you can watch RoboCop. It'll tell you.
Well, it's interesting. You know, you said it's the 25th anniversary of RoboCop. Before we had you on the show, you know, I was trying to watch past interviews of you, and I found one on YouTube. It was a Q&A after you did a screening of RoboCop. I think it was fairly recent, and I just love the honesty and the passion when you're talking about your production of films and TV and directing. What I didn't like is that there was an interviewer who really did wraparounds, and he asked like one or two questions, and afterwards he put this video on YouTube. And these are quotes from him. He called you out of your mind and crazy. Do you know which video I'm talking about?
Yeah, you know, but they said, why is Peter Weller screaming or something like that? Yeah, it's like taken way out of context. You know, I was bitching about a particular idea of process trailers and, you know, the techno stuff that they use now as opposed to what they were using in the night. Look, let's face it. I mean, the best driving sequence you've ever seen is French Connection.
No doubt.
And, you know, freaking got that stunt guy, that guy from Chicago, Richard, I forget his last name. Who's in Bullet, and he drives the Dodge Charger in Bullet, and he also plays the bad guy, you know, the bad Fed in French Connection, who Hackman shoots at the end. But he did the driving sequences for both Bullet, not McQueen's, but he did the Dodge Charger stuff, and he did the stuff in French Connection. So, you know, that's all free driving, man. There's no process trailer. There's no lights, you know, around, you know, on a big pulley. There's no tow truck. They got the damn car and drove the car, you know, and subsequently it has an action to it, has a vivacity to it, it has an urgency, an immediacy, and a lot that you just don't get with a process trailer and 100 lights and a tow rig and all that stuff, whereby, you know, people are like driving with one hand, talking on a cell phone, looking out the window, you know, taking 100 years to say one line. And so that's what, you know, I don't know, it's all taken out of context there, but there's a lot of directors don't like process trailers. And we'd rather do free driving, put, you know, mounts on it. I just directed an episode of Longmire. The director of photography, a great guy, said, hey, why don't we do a process trailer and a tow rig? I said, the hell with that. Put the camera in the car, put the actor in the car, and shoot the guy driving and talking. And, man, it goes by. Not only do you save 3 or 4 hours in a day, but the verve and enthusiasm of the actor, he really has to drive the car, you know, is indelible. You can't change it out, man. And I know that as an actor too. I had to drive a car and talk. There's an urgency to it, man, that you can't replicate when you're being towed and you're faking the driving, you know, and looking off into space and all that jazz.
See, that's why Tom Cruise takes a lot of shit, but that guy's in the car doing his own stunts. He does everything.
Tom Cruise is great, man. I've known him since he's 19 years old, and he's great, period.
Well, you know, it's funny that we're talking about cars, because RoboCop, I read something. In RoboCop, when you're doing those scenes, when he's getting in and out of those cars, I heard that you're not wearing any pants in those scenes.
You're not going to give that away, are you? What a spoiler that is.
I guess the suit didn't fit within the ranges of the car.
No, I'm wearing the top. Yes, I'm wearing the top and the helmet, and that's that.
Does that take away from the authenticity that you're not wearing the full suit?
No, because it's called acting, man.
how the hell do you go to the bathroom in that suit?
That's a secret. But you can.
Do you actually go in it, or do you go outside of it?
No, you don't go in it. It's not a fucking diaper.
A robo diaper.
Something that I thought was great. I was watching RoboCop 2 the other day, because I have not seen that film in forever, and I remember loving it as a kid.
2?
Yeah, 2. I love 2. I love like the first 30 minutes of 2. It's just nonstop mayhem, and it's very, very violent. So violent it's even violent for today's standards. I can't believe we got away with it then. The one thing that sticks in my head is a little kid that shoots at RoboCop with a shit-eating grin, and he looks at you and says, "You can't shoot a kid, can you, fucker?" I just remember that line stuck with me for over 20 years.
I know. You know who wrote that, don't you?
Who's that?
Frank Miller, you know, the...
Oh, yeah.
The 300 guy, and Batman and all that, man. He's great, Frank.
What a great scene. What a great scene. Back in the 90s, it was
Star Trek.
We didn't talk about Star Trek. So what does it feel like to be part of the number one movie in America again?
It feels fantastic, and, you know, it's just a continuation of how fantastic it was to shoot it with J.J. and a great crew and a great cast, man. It was one of the most pleasurable times I've ever had on a set, ever.
He's worked with some quality directors, man. J.J. Abrams, Cronenberg.
Well, what makes J.J. so good, though?
I'm sorry?
What makes J.J. so good?
Okay, here's what it is. There's a lot of guys who got a great vision and know how to execute it, you know, in a particular way that they like to. And I've worked with, like you said, great ones. Woody Allen, Michelangelo Antonioni, Mike Nichols, Cronenberg, Sidney Lumet, But, you know, and everybody's got a different style. But, you know, J.J. is quick. He comes to the floor with a real specific game plan. But the added attraction of J.J. is, like, I mean, he said he'd shoot that movie in 88 days, and he did. CGI stuff is a different deal, but the live-action stuff, he shot on sets, loves sets. You know, he wants as little CGI as possible. He wants big, beautiful sets, so the actors have something to work with that could create a physical life. So they're not just in a space with a big green screen. Hey, that's the best thing. Second thing is, so there's a physical reality to him that he absolutely adores. Second, like I say, he comes to the set with a game plan so that you are always working, man. There's a momentum to it. There's a ferocity to it where you're, like, always driving. And that's great for an actor because, you know, you spend downtime in a Winnebago waiting 3 hours for some guy to figure out where to put the camera. You know, the air goes out of your balloon as an actor.
Yeah.
The best thing of all, the capper, is that his set demeanor is one of celebration. It's total celebration. This guy is grateful to be on a movie set. He applauds the boom guy, the dolly guy, the extra who did it well. He knows every. You know, I did a scene with him in 17 Extras. He knew everybody, every extra's name in 20 minutes. He knew them all.
Wow,
yeah.
That's awesome.
He calls them all by name. He is like he has an ethic. I mean, ethic in the purest Greek and Latin sense of a science of principles of compassion for other people, which is what ethics really means. And he has an ethic on a set that makes everyone want to work. It's a joy. And you know, and he says please and thank you to everyone, every note. And thank you, man. He's a happy dude, and he's happy to be there, and he's happy to be with you and that crew. It's not ever entitled or barking or I'm the boss or any of that crap, that entitled crap that goes with a lot of so-called, you know, talented people who essentially, you know, shove their weight around a room and then people go home miserable. JJ is a delight and maybe one of the supreme human beings I've worked with. And I think he gets that ethic from his mom and dad. You know, because his mom and dad were in show business, and Jerry Abrams' dad was a producer. I think I met Jerry Abrams back in the 70s for a movie of the week. But, you know, you could tell that this guy's not a silver-spooned Hollywood-entitled brat. This guy is a guy who really, really works it. He's a fantastic writer. You know, he's fascinated in music, but he really knows film. But most of all, he really is grateful to have the people around him working with him. And that's like a joy.
It's rare, too.
Really rare, man. I mean, it's really rare. You know, the third day on the set, I turned to Bruce Greenwood and said, is this guy for real? Because he hired me in a parking lot, and it was amazing. I didn't know who he was, and he just came out of a parking lot and said, Peter, and I turned around and I said, yeah, and he says, I'm JJ. But then I get, you know, he gives me a hug. I tell him the story about why I did the Fringe episode that, you know, he owns that show. And next thing I know, 4 hours later, he hired me to be one of the 9 stars of Star Trek. So, but the second day on the set, man, it's so much fun. I turned to Bruce Greenwood and I said, when does the other foot drop? And he said, doesn't, man. This is it. This is the most fun we're ever going to have.
So should we expect you in the new Star Wars remake that he's doing?
Well, isn't that fantastic? I mean, he rejuvenated Mission Impossible, and that was sort of dead. You know, Star Trek was sort of like floundering, and, you know, they'd run its course on television. He resurrected that, speaking of resurrection. And now they've given him Star Wars. You know, he's, you know, immensely beautiful things with that.
Oh, I agree. And I'd love to see you be a part of it, man. I'd love to. You said some stuff on CGI. What are your thoughts on CGI? As a director, let's just say they throw money at you to direct this big film. Are you a fan of CGI? Would you minimize it? What's your thoughts?
Well, look, you know, I'm 50-50 with it. You know, the great thing about RoboCop is it's Phil Tippett. George Lucas's guy used stop-motion animation. So, that's, you know, you build these little models that are very costly, and you reshoot the models, you know, in front of a rear-screen projection. And, you know, that's a talent in itself. When I was teaching a course on Hollywood and the Roman Empire for Syracuse, I took a trip to Cinecittà, the great studio in Rome, and they opened up. So the CEO opened up a great maps, you know, map drawings of Cleopatra and that are still there in the archives. And you think, wow, how did those guys draw that? So it's evolved. And definitely computer animation is a new thing and quite expensive, but it's the same kind of artistic work. But, you know, I'm saying, gee whiz, I'd rather really work on a real set. And then I see how tastefully Star Trek was done. that he only used that CGI stuff, you know, for the big explosions at the end. That whole thing at the beginning, you know, where they blow up the table, the conference room, he really blew that up. He really built that conference room as a real set, and, you know, you could have CGI'd the heck out of that.
Yeah.
And so I prefer the real space. I know that CGI is the state of the art in terms of special effects, but I'm a sort of physical kind of guy and a visceral kind of guy, and the more reality you have on a set, it's better, I think. It's just more, it's better for the actor, it's better for the director, it's better for the viscera of the film.
Mm. Yeah, I always think about the viscera also. I want to know, what is the what does Peter Weller do to let loose?
Hold it, I'm writing a cigar. That's what I do.
Well, we had so many people send in emails and questions and whatnot, and a lot of people...
Well, here's what I do to let loose. I go to Italy. I hang out in Italy, do nothing. I drink a cappuccino. I wander around, look at art. I teach undergrads once in a while.
Where do you go?
Where do I go?
Yeah, where in Italy?
I go all over. I teach for Syracuse University out of Florence, but I teach Italy soup to nuts. You know, I'll take field trips everywhere in Italy, but... My wife and I have had a home in Italy in the south, near Naples on the sea.
Oh, okay, yeah. I was just in Italy about 9 months ago. Love it.
Where were you?
I was actually in Naples.
Really? Did you go to the Amalfi Coast at all?
No, I didn't. I'm actually not sure what that is.
The Amalfi Coast is Amalfi and Sorrento and Capri and Positano and all these beautiful places, Ravello.
Next time you go, get in touch with the Wellers.
Oh, next time I will be calling you first. So, like I said, we had a lot of people, so many emails when we said you were going to be on, so many different questions, and we got so many people on hold right now that are dying to talk to you.
Go ahead.
I have a couple here that were email questions, Twitter questions, Facebook. They want to know about some rumors. I got these are questions that I had several different times and differently phrased. There was a rumor, and we want to clear this up. Is this true or not? Rumor that Corey Haim said that when he was on a movie set with you, he went up to compliment you on the first day of shooting, and that you threw him up against the wall and told him not to ever speak to you again after a take, and called him a little shit.
That's horseshit.
Okay.
That's horseshit and too bad. You know, he's a talented kid, and Corey Feldman is a good friend for a long time, and I knew Corey Haim. And his, you know, his first flick, and he's a very gifted kid, troubled. And you know, it's sad that he passed away. But no, I never threw anybody. I've never touched anybody. I've never, you know, a couple of bar fights when I was a kid, but I've never had any altercation with anybody, physical altercation with anybody on the set.
It's called being in character. He was in character. That was his character. So the kid couldn't deal with
it. No. No, he was a talented kid, but a mess.
Well, I want to know. Okay, so that wasn't real. What does make you angry?
What makes me angry? Well, man, you know, I can get angry before I walk out the damn door in the morning. So, you know, if the coffee machine isn't, if my espresso machine isn't heated up, I can get angry. but I don't get angry because. Because nowadays, you know, for the last decades, many decades, I have a spiritual process, you know, that puts me in touch with some sort of asking of the cosmos, infinity, God, or whatever, to lead me and give me some kindness and, you know, enjoy the day. And subsequently, I don't get that anger anymore. But somebody promising me something and then not following through, you know, L.A. is a city of a lot of, like, let's have lunch and I'll call you a situation. And that's like sort of, I don't get angry at that anymore about people's bullshit in this town. You know, the great thing about New York, it's a gladiator fight. If you lose, you always get thumped down. They got no time, you know, to bullshit you. It's no right to your face. That isn't going to work. Or it's, yeah, you're great. And that's the beautiful immediacy and danger of New York. And L.A. is more insidious. You know, you can float through New York, like Buddy Hackett said. It feels like you went to arrived at a cocktail party when you're 20 and you left when you're 75, you know, and you didn't meet anybody. You just met a whole lot of people, said, we'll have lunch. And that's the thing that's, like, frustrating about L.A., but, you know, that's L.A. L.A. is a dangerous place because it's like everybody's got a hidden agenda. Nobody's really out front, But on the same time, not biting the hand that feeds me, I am grateful every day to be on a movie set. A movie set, you know, my wife said, I turned to my wife and my 20-month-old kid, I said, you've made me happier than I've ever been. My wife said, ah, bullshit, you're happiest when on a movie set. I said, well, you know what? That's true. And I'm even happier when you come to visit me on a movie set.
What do you think, you know, to go along with that, what do you think about the fans? You know, you got a lot of overzealous fans, especially when you're so recognizable, especially being in hit movies like RoboCop, being the title character, it has such a cult following. We see it all the time here in New York. Someone walks around the street just trying to go to the grocery store, people bombard you with autograph requests, pictures, and if you happen to turn the wrong person down, all of a sudden, 2 days later, it's on the internet, oh, Peter Weller's a jerk because he didn't take a picture with me. Oh, he's a dick. Like, these people have these senses of entitlement with these things. What are your thoughts on fan interaction?
Well, hang on a second. I don't mind fan interaction at all. I am grateful for it. And most fans, I got to say about 90% of fans are polite. And when they ask for a picture or something like that, you know, with their kid or something like that, it's a delight to do that. You know, it's honoring their feelings. And if they have feelings about a movie and most of them are legit, then you have to honor them. There are some, though, autograph hounds who have, like, shoved four or five posters in my face, and I'll sign one. And they go, and then they get all pissed off that I'm not signing four or five or six that they could sell on the internet for some loot. You know, I followed a couple of people, like, speaking of Corey Feldman and other people, who said, well, you know what, I'll sell my own autographs to make some loot out of it. I'll sign one for you. I'll sign one for your kid, but I'm not going to sit there and sign 20. And if you get pissed off and you put it on a blog, tough shit. You know, you got your one, man. Be grateful for that.
All right, before we go to calls, I got one more question. I thought this is very, very interesting. Out of all the questions you can ask Peter Weller, this is what this person wrote. This is Marie from South Dakota wanting to know, what does Peter Weller think of Kim Kardashian and Kanye West having a baby?
Yikes. I could care less, man. You know, I got two words that sums up what's off, not wrong, but off, out of tilt about planet Earth. And it's called reality TV. There you go.
Don't get me started.
Yeah, we don't even want to get
me started, Peter.
All right, let's take some calls real quick. All over the world right now. We got Gerard from Florida. Gerard, you're on the line.
Oh, yeah. What are your thoughts on the actor Richard Grieco?
Richard Grieco?
Yeah, that's what he said.
Who is he?
Exactly. All right, next question. Let's go to Sally from Texas. Sally, you're on the line.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Hi, Mr. Weller.
Hi, Sally. You from Texas?
Yes, Houston.
Houston, you know, I'm from San Antonio. You know what we say about Houston?
What?
That ain't Texas, that's Houston.
I believe it.
No, Houston's great. I got a lot of friends and fans in Houston, and I love Texas.
Yeah, it's a nice city. I'm happy with it. I haven't seen Star Trek Into Darkness yet, but I just have a quick question. What are your thoughts on the mayor of Detroit declining to erect a statue of RoboCop in the city?
No, I can't. You know, I did a thing on Funny or Die and Will Ferrell's, you know, site for that.
Yeah.
Where I did an imitation of Aretha Franklin. And look, here's the thing about that. You know, Martha Reeves of Martha and the Vandellas, I think she was on the city council, and she suggested, I can get you on, I'm gonna have a bing about this, man. Civic statuary, which is part of my PhD thing. Here comes some asshole on a moped. It's one of the Teamsters on Sons of Anarchy, the asshole. I'm on the set of Sons of Anarchy right now. I'm preparing because I'm one of the house directors, in-house directors. I direct three episodes now.
You need to a little bit of spoilers then. What can you tell us?
Oh, no, man. It's going to be heavy, man. They're going to really mess some shit up, man. They're going to it's fabulous. It's fabulous. But anyway,
you're with my boy Theo right now. Theo Rossi is a big friend of the show.
Yeah, well, look, I'm on the set right now. I'm just outside. But civic statuary goes all the way back to Greece and Rome. People need icons. And I know I'm just talking about RoboCop, but when Martha Reeves suggested that Detroit put up their soul icons, Otis, Aretha, you know, the Motown people, Marvin, so forth, those people are American heritage artistic icons. And that was a brilliant thing, and it got shot down by Bing and the city council. A lot of them were for it. But this is still the redoing of their baseball field. Detroit has made a lot of progress, man. They tore down this lunatic parking garage in front of the river. Now it's a beautiful river walk. They rebuilt the baseball field. There's cafes downtown, so forth like that. Detroit needs icons, man, to have people. Doesn't matter whether it's Henry Ford and the Motor Company, you know. It's got to be. And so when they brought up this thing about RoboCop, I mean, RoboCop indemnifies and he represents Detroit. So I said, yeah, that's a good idea. It's not really about Peter Wallace so much as it's about another civic emblem. If you go to Florence, the Medici are all over the place. Donatello's got statues. Michelangelo's got statues. You go to Rome, those antique statues there. You go to Athens, they're in England. These are the things that people walk by. Yes, do they take it for granted after a while? But they stop and look, and the tourists stop and look and go, wow, Detroit. This is the center of Motown. But, you know, you've got to have culture in your blood. And as Cicero said, you've got to know your state. Didn't mean like Tony Robbins' emotional state. He meant the place that you come from. And if you don't have an investment in the civic pride of your state, you are doomed to remain, this is Cicero speaking, you are doomed to remain an infant given to reactive behavior who's got a two-foot agenda and cannot see the long road, the big picture. And it's too damn bad that they can't, not necessarily just RoboCop, but all of the heroes that have come out of Detroit, they should put those statues up. It would cost them not a penny. Yeah. And Detroit's a great city, man, and they should do it.
Wow.
They should.
Look at that passion right there. Right.
They should.
Two more. Let's go to Mac from New York. Mac, you're on the line.
Hey, I just wanted to say I'm a big fan. RoboCop was so great. I mean, you must have been on top of the world, man. You must have been picking up chicks. I just want to ask about role-playing. I mean, did you role-play in the bedroom as, like, RoboCop or anything like that? Because that's what I do with my women back then. I was RoboCop. How about you?
No, man. You know, I'm happily married, and my whole sense of passion is totally vanilla, and the wildest I get is vanilla, and I don't wear it. She does.
All right, we got Paul all the way from Australia. Paul, you're on the line.
Yes. Oh, my goodness. Thank you, Matty. My goodness, Robert or Peter, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you? I got a friend down there, Jono, in the morning, man. The great radio guy.
Oh,
out of Melbourne.
Great. Well, I'm in Canberra, so anytime you're in Canberra, come give me a visit. I've got two quick questions, Peter. What are your thoughts on the new RoboCop remake? What are your thoughts on that one?
You know something, I'm long gone out of RoboCop, and it's the icon I'm really proud of is RoboCop 1, like I was just telling the guys. It's such a fantastic movie and prescient, and, you know, it tells a lot about, the con of big business and privatization and so on. So I don't really have an investment in it and want to remake it. I do this, though. I was down opening Star Trek, the first IMAX showing in 3D in Austin with Harry Knowles. You know where Harry Knowles is, the great Harry Knowles? Ain't it cool, Harry Knowles? And so, you know, he carries a lot of weight, and he and J.J. had asked that RoboCop be screened back-to-back, and Warner's releasing, I think, and, the guys who own it didn't want to give him a print because they don't want anybody looking at the one until the other one comes out. Now, I can understand their philosophy behind that. They don't want to have a comparison. They really want to pitch the new one. But at the same time, Harry Knowles, both Harry Knowles and J.J., a little miffed and said, hey, you know, this is not egalitarian. It's not equanimous with what we want to do with RoboCop. We just want to show it to some people who are like the web group guys of the world. And finally, they just caved. So I don't have an invested interest in it. I will say this, that the first one, which I am, like the 25th anniversary, realize how proud I am to be part of it. It's going to be really hard It's really hard to match that writing and that direction of Verhoeven. Mike Minor and Ed Neumeier, who wrote it, and Paul Verhoeven, who directed it, you know, had a thing in it, man, that is charged with the humanity, and, you know, it's going to be hard for them to tap that, I think.
I agree.
You can't top it.
I agree.
No.
So can you just give us a little bit of juice on Sons of Anarchy?
Give a little bit of juice on what?
Sons of Anarchy? Anything?
Yeah. A little bit of juice on Sons of Anarchy. Well, some really great stuff is going to happen, man. You know that we left it with Clay in jail, you know, framed for Pope's murder, and his wife and his nephew, his adopted son, set him up, and he's going to like have a, you know, his particular arc. Ron Perlman, my dear friend, what he's going to get to play, this, you know, is a real bottomed out truth, man. It's going to be powerful. And I mean, crap is happening. I'm shooting some stuff now that's just like wild. And Kurt Sutter, I met with him. He's the dear friend, gifted guy who created it. Just said I can't do any spoilers yet because we're only in episode number 2. But I have to tell you this. I am playing a guy myself on it. I'm playing an arc of a cop. Yeah, man. I'm playing a cop who is like a shot maker and who runs the port in Stockton. And you don't mess with this guy named Borowski. And this guy will mess you up, man.
Awesome. Some exclusive news right here. Borowski. Peter Will will be on our FX screens very soon. Sons of Anarchy will be back next, I think at the end of this year, right?
July.
I think it starts, I'm pretty sure it starts in July, man.
Man, I can't wait. I cannot wait. Peter Weller, one of the stars of the number one film right now in America.
Hang on a second. Yeah.
What's going on
with that? Yeah, you want to go in that office right there and give him, because I'm not the guy who does that. Yeah.
The
office is that door right over there. The office is right there.
Yep.
You walk right around there and you got to go through the guard thing there, man.
Yeah, ask the guy in the moped.
I'm not the dude. Yeah.
He's not the dude.
Yeah.
He's the uncle about.
Give me a thing. Yeah,
that's,
man.
That's the other Noel's Beyonce.
Okay, guys, go ahead. What do you got next?
All right. Now that's it. We know you're on limited time. We know you're on set. We don't want to keep you longer. We want to thank you for coming on tonight. You're the star of the number one movie in America right now. You still should go out and see it, Star Trek Into the Darkness. Really excited to have you on, Peter, and we got to have you back on again when Sons of Anarchy starts.
Whatever you guys want me on, I'm on, man. You guys are great.
Well, thank you so much. We appreciate it. Mr. Peter Weller. Thank you again.
Thank you, guys, and thank you for listening. Thanks for all the listeners, too, man.
Yeah, take care.
Thanks,
Peter.
Brother.
Peter
Weller. Wow, that's an icon, man.
He is an icon. I hope Richard Grieco wasn't listening.